Hello and welcome to Kicking Tires. My name is Jimmy.
And I'm Justin.
And today it is not July yet. It's only June.
June 1st. But
I thought it was Canada Day.
We're almost halfway through the year. Almost.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But today is fully sponsored by Toyota.
Again. I feel like we've had a lot of episodes like that, but they might be the only manufacturer that's like releasing new stuff amidst this supply shortage. And it's not even new stuff. A lot of it is just like rehashed versions of old stuff. But
it's still a lot of interesting, you know, cars that they're coming out with. So let's dive right into it here. The first one is a special edition for the GR86. I mean, this was just launched last year, so a special edition seems kind of like early. But we got one. This new kind of special edition. So in Canada, there is only 20 of them.
Wow.
Which makes it super, super rare. I think there's more LFAs than there's going to be for this special edition. But in the US, there's 860 of them. So
the hell.
So you're going to, you know, get a lot more of them in the US than you are in Canada. What's special about it is you get a GR Catback performance exhaust with black chrome tips. Nice. There's the exclusive solar shift orange color that you see. There is this graphic that's on the rear window or rear pillar. And then there's a black duckbill spoiler on the rear and forged 18-inch wheels. There's no additional power or anything else like that. But
I wonder if the Catback is a little bit more power.
I mean, it's one of those, my Canon L filter puts on 10 more horsepower.
Yeah, people talk about, and then people go, you're losing back pressure or whatever. it's an interesting look. So the stripe, we've saw that on the A91 Supra. I liked it on that one, on the blue. But on the orange, it looks a little bit, I don't know, Charger. I'm not a big fan of this orange. I don't know if many cars can really pull this off. And the wheels they put on, I'm not a fan of. They look winter wheel. Like, I don't know.
This is just me. I feel 18s are too big for this chassis. I personally like a 17 on it because it just looks better to me. And there's just too many holes in this wheel. Like I know it's a light forged wheel, but there's just too much going on in it. The stripe doesn't bother me as much because it's so little.
Yeah. And it kind of matches the arch, like the fender.
Yeah. Design. It's just, there's so little bit of that little stripe. It doesn't really bother me. Mm. And I kind of like the orange because I like the orange in the RZ. Is it RZ? No, LC.
Yeah.
LC?
Well, so the normal GR86 Premium with the 18-inch wheels, they're black. Those don't look as... those have a simpler design to it, and it looks better. This one is very busy, and it doesn't really match the look of the car. Like, this, I feel like, could go on, like, a Sienna or something like that.
Yeah. Good news is, you know, for anyone that's going to be buying this, they're probably going to take those wheels off, put something else on, and save those for, you know, when they want to resell this vehicle. Because at 20 units in Canada, you know for sure this car is going to be on VAT.
Yeah.
But that's really it. Nothing too special about it. I think it looks decent. Kind of reminds me of Tony the Tiger, Frosted Flakes.
Well, and here's I want to bring up one thing, is that there are some special editions that are, you know, really rare, and they're worth something, or not worth something monetarily necessarily, but like you pull up in that and people are like, that is the special edition. And I think the Supra, the blue one, A91, really, when you see those, you're like, okay, that's a little bit better than the other ones. Mm-hmm. And like, even as a 2021 Supra owner myself, I'm like, okay, that blue one, that one is legit. This one, I don't feel like it brings much to the table. It's really just like uglier wheels and
and the color.
And a color that I don't think is that appealing. So to me, there is no like flex necessarily to owning the special edition. And then you have one of 20. So are you really going to enjoy driving it? Or are you going to baby it? And really, like, it's, to me, it's neither here nor there. Like, it's pretty forgettable for me.
Yeah, definitely nothing that really stands out. But, you know, at 20 units, it's going to be something that a lot of people are going to be kind of lusting after, I think. Moving right along, though, because we got so much to cover today. Toyota also refreshed the Corolla. I mean, the Corolla really isn't that big of a sales hit just because there's really no one that's buying it. But they have made some updates. The main thing is the base 1.8 liter 139 horsepower engine is gone. The base now would be a 2 liter 169 horsepower engine, which is going to be much, much better. But honestly, it's still, you know, in the world of 200 horsepower Honda Civics, 169 is still not enough. It really isn't for something that's, with the good looks that it has, I just don't think it's enough. But the big news here is, yes, there's always been a Corolla hybrid, but you can now get an all-wheel drive version. Think Prius E all-wheel drive. So they have a small motor on the rear wheels to help propel it forward. Hybrid system, all-wheel drive. Can't go wrong, really. I mean, the packaging is designed for it and it's still going to be efficient. And they're going to add all the safety suite. So the SafetySense 3.0, there's a slightly redesigned headlight. And the best thing, updated infotainment. Because that old infotainment in the Corollas were just terrible. This new one, it's the same one that's in like the Lexus NX and the Tundra. It's going to be much, much better.
Yeah. Well, hybrid E all-wheel drive, I think that is what really draws you to this car. Like, this car had no appeal going for it. It had a hybrid model, which was pretty popular, especially for rideshare or Uber. Mm-hmm. But I think the regular Corolla, there's no reason for it to exist. Like, there's no... I can't say anything good about it. Like, if someone were to ask me, hey, should I get this car or that car? And I'm just like, it's really hard for me to recommend a normal Corolla hatch or sedan. I think everyone thinks the hatch looks great, but to me, it looks good, but it's like, doesn't do hatch things very well. Like, the trunk is tiny.
It's too small of a vehicle.
And it's overpriced. In my opinion, at least. Yeah.
But that's a Corolla update. But the more interesting one isn't the Corolla regular one, but the Corolla Cross. We already knew this was going to come, but the Corolla Cross is coming up with a hybrid. And this is going to be super important for, well, the Corolla Cross. Because standard Corolla Cross, you get the 2 liter that's in the regular Corolla. It's 169 horsepower. It takes almost 10 seconds to reach 100. This, with the new hybrid system, it is an e-all-wheel drive hybrid system, like most Toyotas, I should say. Mm-hmm. 194 total horsepower, 0 to 100, I should say, 8.2 seconds. So a good second faster than the regular gasoline motor. And 37 combined MPG or 6.4 liters for 100 kilometers.
I feel like Toyota still makes the boring gas engines for those people that want Toyota for Toyota reasons. Like, they're like, I just want the most reliable car that'll last me 40 years, and I don't want to maintain it. I don't even want to do oil changes on it, and it will still run. And they will do that. Like, frankly, they will run on anything, and they will run the same. Like, they're not very high performing engines in any way, but they will last you a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think that's the appeal of the regular ones. But I don't know. As we shift, it just it's really hard to make a case for the gasoline engine. Again, with the sedan or with the hatchback or now with the Corolla Cross, the hybrid is really the no-brainer because you're spending not a lot more money typically. Typically, like, what, $2,000, maybe $3,000?
Yeah.
You get it all back in resale. You get it all back with the performance, and you get it all back with fuel economy, especially with the current gas prices. I cannot, again, make a good case for those gasoline engines. But they, I think they have that portion of maybe old school buyers that are just like, I want a Toyota for Toyota reasons. And, you know, Toyota is known for building very reliable but boring and not innovative engines for the last 2-3 decades, basically. And mm-hmm. they are unashamedly like using the same technology from, you know, over a decade ago, and they have no problem with that because their buyers want them for that reason, which on a commuter car kind of makes sense. But mm-hmm. to me, the hybrid tech is proven. I don't need to get the inferior version to save $2,000.
Absolutely. The only thing is with the Corolla Cross, now a $2,000 more, it closes that gap on the RAV4 hybrid again, like even more.
Yeah.
So, well, like,
it's so hard to get a RAV4 hybrid that hopefully this, I don't know if this even eases things, or maybe they're just like distributing the amount of batteries and chips that they get that they're not necessarily making, you know, alleviating some of that demand for the RAV4 hybrid. People are just going to take what they can get these days, honestly, but it's a decent car. I don't think it's like overpriced necessarily, but it is compared to the RAV4 hybrid. Like, you still feel like you get a little bit more car for your money. I will say about the all-wheel drive system though, because I've been driving the RAV4 hybrid for a while now, almost 2 years. I drove a new UX for a while, and the all-wheel drive is not perfect. Like, you can tell that's a front wheel drive motor. Like, it does slip more so than traditional all-wheel drive system, because the front, it drives like a front wheel drive car, and unless you really need to use the back. Mm-hmm. And so I frequently light up the front tires, like, without trying. Like, you hit a bump, like a pothole, it will light up. You leave a parking lot and a ramp, it will light up the tires. And I thought it was just my car because I have the big tires and stiffer springs on it. And I drove a UX and I did exactly the same thing. Yeah.
That's, I mean, the UX has a relatively small rear motor, which doesn't really help. So that totally makes sense. Speaking of RAV4, this is your background. I'm skipping a few, but I'm going back. The Woodland Edition. So
I wonder where they got the inspiration for making an off-road version of the hybrid.
Yeah, they looked at your Instagram. They're like, hey, this guy's doing pretty well for his RAV4. Let's do that. So the 2023 RAV4 hybrid, there's a new Woodland Edition. Essentially is like the off-road version. But the only part about it that's really off-road rated is you just get AT tires with it. So that's really it. They say it's TRD tuned suspension. They don't exactly show you like if there's a lift or anything like that. We're thinking it's probably the same as like the off-road version, the regular hybrid. The regular RAV4 non-hybrid, kind of that off-road version, probably the same suspension as that. And that's really it. You get bronze wheels. You also get a roof rack with cross rails, which is kind of nice. But that's really it.
The roof rack is different from the one that I have. The one I have is like flush. This one is taller than the...
This one looks a little taller and a little bit beefier. So maybe it's designed to hold a little bit more.
Yeah, probably.
But sadly, the press release doesn't say anything about that.
Yeah. The bronze wheels. So about the bronze wheels, it's the same as the TRD off-road, but they're painted bronze. And they're 18s, if I remember correctly, which didn't really make any sense to me because this car will take 17s all day long. And typically off-roading, you're going to want more tire. It will be ride better and it will puncture less less easily. And I don't know, I think it looks cooler with a smaller wheel and larger tire.
Yeah, but that's not what the people want these days.
Yeah, if it's got a TRD tuned suspension, it doesn't need much. Like, the nice thing about the RAV4, including the hybrid, is that you can put a pretty decent sized tire on it with no lift. And so with these 18 inch wheels, you can slap a 29 and a half inch tire. So that's going to be a 245/60 18. It's a big tire. Like, that's a Honda Pilot size tire that can go on this. You can't even fit that on a Forester with a lift, with a 2-inch lift, because I had a customer ask about it yesterday, and I looked into it. I'm like, dang, we cannot put really good tires on your Forester, even if we lift it. And the CRV, same thing. I don't see the Rogue being any real difference. But Toyota has left a lot of room in those wheel wells to put big, big tires. That's a 29.5-inch clearance. I'm running a 30 and a half with a little bit of modification, you know, and it's lifted. But I don't know. I don't see anything about, like, protection.
No, necessarily. Well, you do have protection by mud guards.
Yeah, like underbody stuff.
No, you don't get that.
Yeah, which is okay. Honestly, like, someone asked me yesterday, because they saw the CX-50, because people are starting to mod CX-50s, putting all-terrains on them. There's no lift on them yet, but people are putting all-terrains on CX-50s, and someone's like, is that base engine 180-some-odd horsepower enough for off-roading? I'm like, well, the roads that people really go on, you know, for camping, overlanding, they're generally not that aggressive, that you don't need underbody protection. You don't need a low range. You don't need a lot of power. Like, I think that's not really the point of, you know, overlanding. Is you're not rock crawling. You're not climbing Moab or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so the underbody protection is not a huge deal.
Yeah, it's just off the beaten path. That's really all it is.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from the Woodland Edition to something a little bit more exciting. So the Corolla dropped a special edition here, the Morizo Edition for the GR Corolla. So there's only going to be 200 of these in North America. And I say North America because I was reading the Canadian as well as the U.S. newsroom website from Toyota, and they both say 200, and generally that means it's combined. Like, for example, the GR86, it specifically said 50 for Canada, 860 for the US. So I'm thinking there's just only 200 for all North America, which means we'll probably get like 10, if that. So it's gonna be quite rare, but they have done some modifications on this to make it quite unique and cool. So first off, there's no additional power, but there is a little bit more torque, 22 pound-feet more at 295 pound-feet. There's a close gear ratio. The diff gears are shorter. You get forged wheels, which will actually look pretty good on it. There's a stiffened chassis with a chassis mount in the rear. There's front brake ducts, monotube dampers on the front, ultra suede trim seats and cabin. The tires are wider by 10 mil and they're Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2s. And the entire vehicle is 106 pounds lighter thanks to the deletion of rear seats, speakers, and rear window regulators. Oh, as well as rear wiper. So they removed
a rear window regulator.
Just not
it doesn't having. Open.
Doesn't open then.
What?
Yes, so you have a four-door vehicle that has no back seats, and the rear windows don't open. And
they might as well just replace it with like sheet metal and like say, oh, it stiffens the body by X amount, and then make it like a cargo version.
But what's funny is we both know we have a mutual friend that had a four-door GTI that took out the rear seats. So
it's the cargo edition, because you can access the cargo floor, like, you know, the HHR.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the HHR?
Yeah. The little HHR cargo edition thing. Yeah, that's exactly what this
is. Or the caravan CV or whatever it's called, with no windows, because windows are not a necessity.
No, not at all.
These wheels are the same, though, aren't they?
No, like, they're not the same.
Oh, really? They look identical.
They look the same, but they say it's not.
I'm confused.
Well, they say it's not, but I don't know if it is.
Maybe it's different. I feel like sometimes the people that write these press releases are... some stuff gets lost in translation.
Well, they are BBS wheels, and they say made in Japan on it, and they actually look amazing.
Yeah, but I remember the Circuit Edition having, like, the same wheels. Because I remember we commented on how it looked exactly like the GR86 wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know, man. That's just what they wrote. It's insane. But the backseat delete, they actually did a decent job on it. Like, there's carpeting on it, and, like, the seatbelts are gone as well. Like, it's not just kind of half done, but where the seatbelt used to be, the cutout is completely still there. So, like... they didn't, like, give you a brand new panel. They didn't redesign that, but it is a cutout. What is kind of weird, though, is the rear cargo area. It's quite high. I don't know if that's an all GR86 because of the rear diff and fuel tank and everything, maybe. Yeah. But
oh, true.
When I saw that, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a pretty good looking vehicle.
It is, and none of us will be able to get one because they're only making 200 of them. So
there are two colors for you to choose from. It's either this matte gray, or can't remember what's the other color. It was either white, or I think it was white. Can't remember now. Let's see, color.
Yeah. You know what's funny is they're still not very light cars. This one is still almost 3,200 pounds. So, I mean, I get that it's got all-wheel drive and everything, but with all the backseat delete, forged wheels, carbon roof, like, they've done a lot of hardcore weight reduction, and it's still 3,200 pounds. It's still, what, less than, what, 10 horsepower per pound or per... whatever that ratio is, the golden ratio, Ray. Like, it's 3,200 pounds. It should have at least 320 horsepower.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of heavy. And I think that's why the Yaris is, like, cool. Because the Yaris got the same power, but it's light.
Yeah. Smaller, lighter.
Yeah. To me, 3,200 is not... That's kind of the downfall of this thing. Like, I want this car to be good, but I have a feeling it is not going to be that great.
We'll see when the review starts coming out.
Because even the Yaris is not perfect. Like, all the reviews are like, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's not a perfect car. But this is the same car, but heavier.
Yeah, but it does have a longer wheelbase. I did read a lot of the Yaris people say just it's so twitchy because it is shorter. Yeah. So this should help that part.
But make it less fun.
Yeah, a little bit. Let's move on to something just as fun. So in the US, Toyota is launching this GR Cup. So it's a one make series of GR86. Information of the car is coming. Or sorry, pricing is coming later in the summer, but it's supposed to be affordable competition.
Oh man, no Subaru BRZ.
We don't know exactly what affordable competition means. I mean, Nissan has the Nissan Sentra Cup, and honestly, that is affordable competition because that's like 40 grand. Yeah. I really doubt this is 40 grand, but it shouldn't be that bad. The first season will have 14 events in 7 US circuits, so that should take you kind of in some parts of the country, not all over, but the updates onto the car are pretty extensive. So you get a full engine management system from Bosch. You get Borla exhaust, Alcon brakes, JRI adjustable dampers, SATEF, a 6-speed sequential trans, roll cage, 22-gallon fuel cell. You got some custom body panels, including that CF wing on the rear. Like, it's not just the car.
That's very hardcore.
Yeah, it's
like, yeah.
Like, it's the same thing as like the TCR Type R. It's not just the Sentra, which is the car, then they put safety stuff on it. Mm-hmm. So when they say affordable competition, I'm thinking this is still like 100K at least.
Yeah, looking at the brakes, the windows, the aero, it's pretty legit. Like, this thing is going to give a lot of legitimate sports cars a run for its money. And $1 million in total purse. That's pretty impressive. So,
yeah. So you can win something in total. So don't know exactly what that means.
Yeah, who can enter?
You interested?
No. I wouldn't win. not good enough to win. But
I'll just be a spectator.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's Toyota in a nutshell. Let's move on to Lexus, because they announced something that's really, really cool. It's a brand new RX. So the RX has been around for what feels like 30 years. The current generation feels like it's been around for 30 years because it really hasn't got updated in a very, very long time. But this one's all new. New chassis, new platform, new engines, and it's quite different. No more V6, that good old 2GR V6 is gone. In place with either a 2.4 liter four-cylinder turbo or 2.5 liter four-cylinder with hybrid hybridization from the RAV4 hybrid, basically, to the NX hybrid, now to the RX hybrid. So there are three models. There's the base RX 350. Basically, it's the same as the NX 350. Then you got the RX 350, and then the RX 450H. Plus, and then the RX 500H. So the 350, 350H, and 450H Plus is exactly the same as the NX in terms of the powertrain. No difference there. The 500, that's the one that's kind of cool. So it uses the 2.4 turbo from the base engine. It has a 6-speed automatic. But in the back, what it does is they're using an electric motor from the RZ electric SUV. Ooh. So in the rear, there's no physical connection from front to rear, like all all-wheel drive system that Toyota uses. They just use a big electric motor in the rear to power it. Mm. And that's actually kind of cool. Combined 369 horsepower and 406 pound-feet of torque. That nice. Might help with exactly what you said of, you know, the front wheel spinning out, because with a bigger rear motor, it should, you know, distribute that power a little bit better.
Hmm.
It looks, I think, pretty cool. The nose of it is kind of weird, though, because it's the Beluga nose that...
Yeah. To me, when I saw this, I'm like, is that really what it's going to look like? Because it looks... It just doesn't have the... the prestige. The old RX was always... It's boring, but it's elegant. And then this kind of the nose just kind of killed it for me.
Well, the regular 350, I actually kind of like it, because to me it reminds me of like Mercedes, kind of that pin spindle grill that they have, that pin grill. It looks kind of high end, but because of the nose it has, the top part of the grill is no longer that spindle. It's just
weird. It's so weird because like you spent a decade almost a decade trying to, you know, get everyone onto the spindle grill.
And I started liking it.
Yeah, the Predator grill, as people like to call it. And then they block it off, which you could block it off, but not delete it, you know, in a sense that visually it could look the same, but then it could just be blocked off. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and it is mostly blocked off.
The midsection, I'm sure there's absolutely nothing there.
Yeah. So now it just looks like it has a massive underbite. Like, it's not a good look to me. Interior wise, obviously, it is the next level. That's always RX people love their interiors.
Well, the interior,
this one is no different.
It's exactly the same as the NX, really.
It is, but it's got that swooping dash.
It has a swooping part.
It does feel a little bit more premium. Well, and the thing is, if it's like the old models, the RX is not that much more than NX. And so an RX is probably going to be more comfortable. RX used to compete directly with like the likes of the X5 or the GLE back then, the ML, but then now I feel like they've kind of fallen down market, whereas those have all moved up market. And it's,
or maybe this has kind of just stayed the same, while others have kind of moved up a little bit more.
Yeah, like they haven't even really changed their price point that much, right? No. Like, that's the thing, is that, you know, factoring inflation, everything goes up. Like, even a Civic, you used to be able to get like a base one under 20K, and now you're kind of mid-20s realistically with automatic and AC. And the RX is one of these cars that kind of stayed at the same price point. You can load them up like pretty good, like whatever F-Sport 3 and whatever, but to me they are still, well, nowadays they're kind of they slot in between like an X3 and X5 in terms of features, but pricing wise they're more like an X3.
Yeah,
totally. But also size wise they're kind of like an X3.
Well, X3's gotten really big.
Yeah, the midsize, like Germans have gone pretty big.
Yeah, but the RX is, well, this new one should be bigger than the old one.
Yeah.
So we should have more space on the inside.
The RX backseat is way bigger than the X3 though.
For sure. Yeah, definitely looks that way.
Yeah. But as far as like realistically, if you're looking for a 5-seat luxury SUV, you don't necessarily need that extra legroom in the back. I don't think you're getting much cargo space as a benefit, but I notice it in the backseat the most with the at least the outgoing RX is like, okay, this is a much roomier car than those, you know, GLC Q5 and the X3. Mm-hmm. And the NX is the most cramped out of the bunch, at least with the outgoing models.
Well, actually a lot of people compare the NX to like the X1. Mm-hmm. And the GLA and GLB rather than an X3 because it's so small.
Yeah. And pricing wise, Lexus is always a little bit lower. But I do see why, because the engineering, the performance is not up there with the Germans. I think if you had them at the same level, people would be like, why does this handle worse? Why is this slower?
Yeah. Why does it not feel as like solid?
Exactly. Like if I'm going 150K on the highway, like, or doing, you know, 60 over the speed limit, why does this feel like I'm doing 60 over a speed limit?
Whereas, rather than actually, like, it feels like you're doing the speed limit.
There is something like freakish about German cars that like, you don't know it until you've owned one or like driven one long term.
Yeah.
But you go like 50, 60K over on the highway and you do not notice.
Yeah.
And that's even for like cheap cars. Like not even talking about like, oh, you hop in a 911, you don't notice you're going 200, obviously. But even in like normal average,
a regular,
like a 320i, like you hop in like a 320i and you can do 180 on the highway and like it doesn't feel like it's that stress.
There are Autobahn machines, right? Like they just cruise super well on the highway with absolutely no problems.
Yeah. And I think that might be why Lexus doesn't want to move this car up market. Mm-hmm. And well, when you think about it, they don't really have a legitimate competitor because they have the Land Cruiser. The GX is way too truck-like, right? Like the GX is not a pedestrian or not passenger type SUV. I find it's really just like a 4Runner with dressing on it.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah, but you know, about the RX, a bigger version to move up market. We were talking earlier before the show about the L model, that they're not going to do an L model. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there's going to be a next model up from the RX that will be bigger, probably have three rows and probably a little bit more expensive. Yeah.
Yeah, going to be a little bit more from kind of the speculations is the there's going to be a bigger version of the Highlander. People have been saying that it's like the Highlander, like Grand Highlander. Mm. And then the speculation is the bigger version of the RX is going to be based off that Grand Highlander, okay. Which kind of makes sense because the Highlander as a three-row SUV, it's not like it's small, but it is smaller than like the Telluride and the Palisade. And, you know, in this kind of market, people want a decent sized three-row SUV that's efficient. And there really isn't that many out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's move on from Lexus to Buick. So Buick released a concept vehicle here called the Wildcat. Not a Hellcat, but a Wildcat. It's the electrified vision of, well, the next steps in Buick. You might notice there's a new Buick logo on the front of this vehicle. Looks kind of cool, looks kind of different, but it is the design study to reflect, you know, where the next steps of Buick is going. So not an SUV, which is weird. I would think that they would do some sort of SUV. But they decided to do a coupe thing, like a 2+2 Grand Touring Coupe. And Buick, well, they want to go electric. So their entire lineup will be electric by 2030. And they'll be sold under a sub-brand called Electra.
Ah. Buick Electra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's totally a design concept. It looks absolutely really, really cool. The only thing that you'll see on Nick's Buicks is that badge. And I'm trying to find a photo of it because that badge looks super cool compared to the old.
It's basically the fender vents that people don't really like. Like they're kind of tacky, but they're now arranged portrait and like side by side.
It's
kind of cool.
It's basically the current Buick badge, but just straightened rather than having it kind of like, because right now it's cascading up. This is a straight side by side. And I don't know why. I kind of like it. A lot of people hate it, but
yeah. You know. I mean, hopefully Buick's direction is better than just because, you know, the whole point of this concept car is to show people, hey, Buick is going to be about electrification. We're really excited about it. We're making this beautiful car.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, we want to see stuff that, you know, people actually will buy.
Yeah.
And this is not something anyone will buy. Like, ask Polestar how their Polestar 1 is.
You mean the thing that you saw an advertisement for?
I saw multiple advertisements for it in Toronto. I went to Park Royal the other day in North Van, and they have a whole Polestar exhibit or okay. Store. It's not really a store because no one buys Polestars, but I don't know if they sell cars there, but they don't sell anything there. But there's like a showroom kind of thing. There's no car inside. It's just like a Polestar maybe experience center. But that's weird. don't put your money and eggs in this two-door huge luxury sport coupe basket is what I'm saying.
I just don't see, like, I don't understand why this was their concept to show you what Buick's about. If this is what Buick's about, Buick's is going to be gone.
They're not going to survive the next decade.
Like, who's buying 2+2 these days? No one. Like, no one's buying 2+2. Everyone wants some sort of SUV. If you're really thinking about the future, it should have been an SUV. But, you know, who am I to judge big car company? I'm not even a buyer. That's really what it
is. Well, we would legitimately buy a good Buick EV crossover, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that we don't want this. I like looking at this Wildcat, but I don't want to buy it. I don't want to own something like this.
That's actually kind of funny, because next week I am getting a Buick SUV and I'm super excited.
Oh.
It's the one that I've been waiting for. The Encore? Enclave? I don't know. Whatever the big one's called.
Enclave.
I can't remember. That's how forgettable it is. Moving on to BMW. So BMW released the X1. So this is the third generation of BMW X1. And you know what? It looks kind of cartoonish to me, and I kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a lot of the X3, which I like. Yeah. But what I don't like is on BMW's website. So on BMW's website, so it... When you're thinking about a BMW, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be a high-end luxury vehicle. It has all the features and everything that you need. But currently, the X1, it's lacking, because on their webpage, it says, substantial improvements in driving assistant features, including blind spot monitoring for the first time in a BMW X1.
Did the old one not have
blind spot monitoring? It didn't have blind spot monitoring.
No, you couldn't even get it?
Not an option.
What?
Yes. X1 does not have blind spot monitoring. You can't even get it. Like, I when I took the X1 out 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I was like, oh, this is a pretty good car. And then when I changed lanes, I was like, oh my God. I don't know that there's a car there. I mean, I have to look, obviously, but... there was no way for it to tell me. I was floored, like, did not understand. But now, for 2023, you can get it.
Huh.
Crazy, right?
That's absolutely crazy, crazy, yeah. Well, the X1 has aged very well, I think, the second generation. And it's like, we don't realize it's been around for that long. I think that's probably why, because it's been around since what, 17, 18?
Yeah.
And so it's been around for a decent amount of time, and it's aged gracefully because the competitors are not that great. I think that is key, is you have the XC40, which is so niche that it's irrelevant. And then you have the GLA, which is pretty useless compared to this.
GLB would be more comparable.
GLB, but then the GLB is like, the look again is very niche.
Yeah, it's super boxy, that normally.
Yeah, it's top heavy design that's not great.
We
like it, but it's like, I can see why the mass market does not like it.
Yeah.
And then you have the Q3, which is like a Jetta inside.
The Q3, like a base.
Q3 had potential.
The base Q3 pricing and features are actually pretty good, because even a base Q3 gets you a full digital dash.
Yeah, it's just when you look at some parts of it, it just feels kind of
jammy. Yeah, no, it definitely feels cheap.
And I don't think, like, the X1 has cheap stuff in it too.
Yeah,
but the BMW cheap is, it's like, oh, you're hopping in a base model Mini, which is not that bad. Whereas you get in a Q3, you're like, ah, dang, I'm in a rental Jetta. And you fall a little bit deeper down that hole.
So with the 2023 X1, base price US is $45,000 Canadian, which isn't bad. The base engine will be a xDrive 28, which is a 2-liter 4, 240 horsepower. And what's kind of unique, it's a 7-speed dual clutch. Oh. So they're getting rid of the 8-speed.
That's a Mini gearbox then, I think. Yeah. It is a Mini.
Yeah. The Countryman is basically this. So really, it's the same thing. Huge, like the outside, like I said, it looks kind of like a baby X3, which I like. Interior, substantial upgrades. You got the new dash and the new infotainment that's going to be across all BMWs. And you got a decent-looking center console that actually looks useful. Like the drive gears that's available, that's on that, the little dial that's on it, like it looks like it's all useful, which I absolutely like. And there's also a new steering wheel on this, something that I actually haven't seen on other BMWs. So this is probably one of the first ones to have this new wheel. And I think it looks kind of good. See if I can find a photo of it here.
Yeah. I do like the styling. Like, it's very BMW, and it's BMW is not going overboard with their styling on these more pedestrian models. I think they take their chances with like the high end stuff, like that XM thing, that the giant SUV, but they're not, you know, they're not taking not taking too big of a risk with this X1.
Mm-hmm. You can kind of see it in this kind of low resolution here, but it just looks like a different wheel altogether, but I like the styling of it. And I think BMWs have never really done a wrong steering wheel, mm-hmm. but some of their M stuff, it's just a little too thick, too girthy for some people. But this looks very usable.
Mm-hmm. I like their center console setup is very, I don't know, minivan in a sense. And I kind of like it. Like, it's a very upright car compared to the X3 or even the X5. This one is more, you know, mini Countryman. And it's a very kind of van wagon-esque type of ride. And I think people like that when they get into these. Like, it just... You feel
it feels more substantial.
It feels taller than it really is. And yeah, I think this X1 is gonna kill it like the old one. And should we move on? Do we have the iX1?
Oh, I didn't pull that because the iX1 doesn't look like it's coming to North America.
Oh, okay. We will get the plug-in, maybe?
We'll likely get it later on, but the Canadian press release is only the regular X1, whereas the European press release has a regular X1 and the iX1.
Ah, okay.
And the iX1 is an electric version of the X1, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But it looks like they're also doing the plug-in, or I think they will do a plug-in.
Well,
the plug-in hybrid.
No mention of that in the Canadian press release.
Oh,
the Canadian press release only has one engine option, and it's at the 28i.
I see. It seems like BMW and Mercedes are not able to spit out their plug-in hybrids
for North America.
You know, for North America, like, it just, it's not that the products are inferior; they just can't keep up with production. Perhaps
it's most likely a demand thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the next thing, which is the Mercedes GLC. Hmm. So this looks like the current GLC, and you'll be fooled to know that it's exactly the same, but it's not. It's brand new. They just styled it to look like the current one because they have absolutely no imagination.
I mean, that is the Mercedes trend, sadly, the last 5-6 years.
There's nothing about the exterior that makes me like, oh, that's a new car. It's only when you look inside, then you're like, oh yeah, that's a new C-Class. That's when you'll know.
Yep.
Because you got the tablet in the middle, you got the circular vents, which some people absolutely hate.
And you got so much gloss trim to scratch up. Like, I have two demon dogs, and they will make such short work of this GLC's interior. Like, I have two scratches on my RAV4's dash, and that's like a matte rubberized dash that you don't really notice scratches on. But oh my God, if I had a car like this.
So it's a little bit longer than the outgoing one, 2.4 inches longer, slightly longer wheelbase as well. Has been said that the rear legroom is going to be improved, which was one of the GLC's kind of downfall. The rear seats they're just a little bit smaller. The only engine option at launch would be a 2-liter turbo 4 with a mild hybrid system, 258 horsepower, 295 pound-feet of torque, made it to a 9-speed auto and 4MATIC, obviously. So nothing too crazy, but I don't think it needs to be, because the GLC, like, even right now, it sells very well.
Mm-hmm.
People still love the GLC. The only fear I have is this interior, this touchscreen panel, it's not as intuitive to use as the current Mercedes. And I feel like that might be one of the downfalls for buyers that's looking for this. Because most people that are buying GLC are older. Not really younger people. Younger people buy something else.
Yeah. Because there's no controller for this, really. It's all touchscreen.
100% touchscreen.
Yeah.
Volume control is like on the little bar underneath, or of course on the steering wheel, but that's it. So, and it's canted towards the driver as well. So it's a little bit driver focused. So yeah, it's going to be hard to say. Like
the volume control is a slider too.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a slider. If it's the same thing as the S-Class, it's not a slider.
You tap it.
You tap it.
Aye.
Yeah, not the best. Let's move on from that, though, because that's boring. Something that's not as boring. The Land Rover Defender 130. We already knew this was coming out, so it's not a surprise. But the surprising thing is, at least to me, is how they implemented this. So the 130 is a three-row, eight-passenger version of the Defender 110. And the 110 used to stand for the wheelbase. And the 130 has a longer wheelbase. But it doesn't. The wheelbase is exactly the same. You just get this extended length.
Think Cadillac. Well, you know all the full-size American SUVs? Like, so long in the back.
Yeah.
And this looks like that. Like, it's wearing an extra foot of
13.4 inches added to behind the rear
wheel. More than a foot. Yeah. And it just doesn't, it doesn't look as good. I'll start off with that, because I think the short one, the 90, is the coolest, obviously. The 110 looks very good, and then this just looks like it's a little bit too long.
Well, the thing is, the Defender is supposed to be an off-road vehicle. It has a really good approach and departure angle, but you lose all departure angle now with the foot added to the rear of the vehicle. It's absolutely insane how long it looks. It looks like a Grand Wagoneer from the side.
Yeah. I mean, they still cut the bumper relatively high compared to...
There still is a cut to kind of help with that departure angle, but
yeah,
no matter what, it's still a foot longer.
Yeah, the Defender is supposed to be their legitimate off-roader, and the 110 has proven itself to be pretty competent when you put the right tires on it, raise it up a bit. They're pretty sweet vehicles. Lots of good tech in them, and you know, it is what people realistically use it for. I think if you're shopping for this segment, right, like you don't have a, from the European luxury brands, you don't have a really rugged offering, and so this is kind of it.
Yeah, I mean, the X7 and the GLS are the only real European three-row SUVs that can have people in the third row, but they're not designed to go off pavement.
Yeah, they're not. They don't even try.
No,
with those ones. So yeah, this is really it as far as.
Yeah, but they have a photo of a person sitting in the third row. I don't exactly know how tall this guy is, but he looks decently comfortable.
Yeah, he's got longish legs.
It could be the photo itself. I mean, it could be like a 5'2" dude. Like, you know, he has no idea.
Yeah, but usually like a three-seater setup, there's decent room. The floor does look a little bit high, so your knees are probably a little bit higher up. So it's still more like for kids, but like
jump seat style.
Yeah. I don't know how this will compare, I guess, to the Land Cruiser. Does Land Cruiser have an 8-seater?
Well, you can get a Land Cruiser 8 three-row SUV, a three-row version of the Land Cruiser. It's just not here in North America.
We get the Sequoia.
We get the Sequoia, but not really comparable in a way. I mean, kind of, but not really. Yeah. So the P130 that it's named... or kind of named, unfortunately you can't get a V8. So the P110, you can get the Defender 110, you can get the V8, as you know, I think even the 90, you can get the V8.
Mm-hmm, with those little brakes.
Yeah, but the 130, you can only get it with a 3-liter turbo six, the P300 and the P400, 296 horse and 200 or 395 horse, respectively. So, like, it's kind of weird. The biggest one, you don't get a V8.
Yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive.
But it's like, it's not designed to be a performance-y. So even that P400, yeah, the 400 horsepower, I mean, it's sufficient, I guess. So,
and I think when you put that much performance into a three-row SUV, you're going to make the third row very sick.
That's totally
that's not my downside.
Problem. That's not my problem. You're too slow in calling shotgun. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And then some information from a DeLorean. They put out Alpha 5 or Alpha V, but it's called Alpha 5. It has gullwing doors, which is kind of cool. It's 2+2, so you can
looks
get
like a Buick.
It's like a Buick, yeah. It's just
called. I was gonna say Buick. If Buick invested in a lot of money into that Wildcat, they're gonna end up like DeLorean. And then here's DeLorean with
non-existent. So you still get gullwing doors like the old DeLorean, but no flux capacitors, unfortunately, in it. What I do like on their website, though, is they do put a 0 to 88 miles per hour estimated time, 4.35 seconds. I mean, the original DeLorean couldn't get to 88 miles per hour, so that's not bad. Fully electric, obviously, but this is just their concept. Would they actually have a vehicle in the future? Who knows? But if they do, would it sell? Maybe to people that had a DeLorean or really wanted one in the past, but not to people that just want a car. Because this is the standard 2x2, and let's be honest, no one really cares.
The performance number, 0 to 88.
0 to 88, 0 to 60.
They should give it an 88 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, right. But no, they gave a potentially 100 kilowatt hour battery. Right now, it's all speculation because no real car has been produced.
But who is investing in this company? I want to know.
Some not so smart people, maybe. What I will
feel say, like, just people with money to burn, like,
yeah. I really like the gullwing because they have this LED strip on the back end, so it illuminates red. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just really cool to me. I would have thought at least that red would go towards the doors, but sadly it doesn't. But other than the gullwing doors, there's nothing that's on this car that reminds me of the old DeLorean.
It's not like brushed stainless.
Yeah, it's not made from stainless steel. I mean, we really wouldn't want a stainless steel electric vehicle. Your range is just cut in half, but like, there's nothing about it that screams DeLorean to me. But that's really it.
Yeah.
That's really the news for this week. Anything else you want to add?
No, we can talk about your channel if you have any news.
Nothing major. I mean, just kind of the usual stuff. Got some Volvo stuff posted recently. I've been getting quite a bit of attention. Had a Tesla Model Y versus an Ioniq 5 and Tesla fanboys saying, why would you buy a Hyundai?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that comment. So what? They're just upset about the Hyundai and saying Hyundai is like a cheap person's brand.
Well, I mean, I'm just comparing the two vehicles. He posted on the channel saying, well, and a Hyundai is for cheap people. Tesla is prestige. I wanted to reply. I'm like, the only people who think that Tesla's a prestige are Tesla owners.
Yeah.
No one else. Because let's be honest, the vehicles, there's a lot of deficiencies. If you work on Teslas or if you are around them, you know exactly how bad they are. They're not a prestige vehicle. So go away. Like,
yeah, it's just in their circle. They think it's hot, hot poop, but it's really not. Like, it's, I don't know. Between the Model Y and the Ioniq 5, like, it's hard to compare them. Like, I just don't think it's that apples to apples. But again, there's 20K between them.
They're definitely not apples to apples. I didn't expect anyone that's buying an Ioniq 5 to look at a Y or vice versa. But what I wanted to show is, like, for 20K less, you're not getting that much less of a vehicle, because the Ioniq is such a good car. And actually, this week I have the EV6, so the cousin. I love the EV6 styling. As we discussed previously, I love the styling on the EV6. Mm-hmm. The taillights, great looking vehicle.
I'm curious how it drives, if it actually drives different from the Ioniq.
It is a little different.
The Ioniq seemed a little bit boaty to me.
It is different. The EV6 does feel sportier, a little bit stiffer. And the best thing about it is the back end does come around. So it does send more power to the rear than the front, allowing you to have a little bit of that kind of oversteer feel, even in the dry. But as a family man, I would not pick the EV6.
The shape?
Just the overall shape. The rear doors, how they cut down. Like, getting in and out at my height, 5'11", getting in, I'm ducking to go in. Mm-hmm. Putting Oliver in, my son, into his child seat, it's very, very difficult. The trunk space is also compromised because of the steeply raked rear window. And the front window, that, like, the A-pillar almost ends, like, in front of your head because it's so raked. And because it's a giant window, sun comes in, shines on the glossy black plastic on the center console right into your eyes. So, I mean, it's a good car to drive, but so far, not loving it as much as the Ioniq.
The Ioniq just makes sense. Like, I think pricing-wise, it's really good. Oh, actually, I did want to drop some news on car purchasing, because I'm like, remember I talked about the GR Corolla and how you could potentially get one by trading something in and, like, tempting the dealer. And so we ordered a Prius Prime for my girlfriend's dad, and it was originally slated to deliver April, maybe May. And so now June 1st rolls around, they're like, you know what, it's probably coming July now. And I'm just like, I bet they sold that car multiple times to other people that have more enticing offers. It goes both ways, and you have to deal with both sides of it. It sucks. Like, buying cars right now really sucks. I don't know. Yeah. The whole experience is just awful. There's some dealers that are more ethical, and it's like, it's first come, first serve. You put your name down. And
I know Hyundai is stepping in, like Hyundai Canada. So when you go in for a car, the list is not controlled at the dealer. It's controlled at the corporate level. So whenever that next car is released, it gets sent to that dealer for that person. Mm-hmm. If that person says, I don't want it, it moves on to the next person. So it shifts to another dealer or whatever. But that's actually a really good way of going about doing it. But the only thing is, like, you just have to wait.
Yeah. And the problem with that too is, so I have a customer today that we uninstalled their car, their dash cam last week, and they were set to take delivery of the RAV4 hybrid on Saturday or Sunday. Ooh, and they went in. Vehicle. Yeah. And they went in and they're like, they lowballed him on his RAV4 trade-in. He was trading in like a 2014 RAV4. They lowballed him on that. And so no deal. Today we put the dash cam all back in, because the dealers have so much leverage, like, just dangling this in front of you, right? Like, take it or leave it. We'll give you the crappiest deal.
There's another guy that's going to take it if you don't want it.
Yeah. But it's rough. Like, I don't know. Because from when you order it to when you pick up the car, when the car actually arrives, there's over half a year, and it's hard, you can't really, like, trade it in. Like, you still need to drive that car, and there may be wear and tear on it, and markets change. And so what you could get for it back in January when you ordered versus July when it actually arrived is going to be different. So I don't know, just be careful with these things. Like, don't let a dealer take advantage of you, because it's really easy for them right now. And it's cutthroat right now. That's the thing, is I can't even blame a dealer for doing this, because they have so few cars coming in that you gotta milk people, right? Like, that's unfortunately, it's tough times and people are being tough, right? But just be careful, do your due diligence, and don't. I think a good idea is to just have a backup plan, right? Like, if this friend came to me and he's like, "Hey, they lowballed me this," I would be like, "Take the car anyways. We'll try to sell it or something." Like, just find another way to. You can probably leverage that car, and with the dealer's lowball offer, the tax credit doesn't even matter at that point. Probably, you might have breaking even. Like, let's say you wanted 25 for it, they offered you 18 for it. Even if you sell it privately, you don't get any tax credit, but you still come up on top, right? Yeah. So there's other ways around it, and so if you have that allocation, it's still possibly a good idea to take advantage of it. So maybe don't, because that's what happened with the GT4 too, is that they lowballed me on it. They dangled it because, hey, we can get you one. You don't have to wait 2 years like everyone else, but we're only going to give you this amount for your car, which is 20% lower than any other dealer would give me for it. And I'm like, no thanks. Still got the car, but got ugly, to be honest. Yeah, it got real ugly. Yeah, it's just terrible times. But apparently new cars are rolling in. I'm seeing deliveries because we see the trends with our appointments. We see a lot of new cars come in this week, last week, and used car dealers, because we have clients that are partners that run used car dealers, and they're like, you know, used cars are slowing down a bit because the new car deliveries are coming through. So yeah, I think things are changing. Like, it's a very dynamic marketplace. And it's really hard to say, like, what's a good idea now is not necessarily a good idea in 2 months' time, because the market has shifted. But yeah, I don't see the supply shortage going away anytime soon, though.
I don't think so neither, because yeah. A dealer actually offered me last week $15,000 for my CRV again.
I don't know, man.
I what am I
going to do? Don't need it. You could take the cash and invest it, or
nope. There's
go on vacation.
There's no better car than a 2010 Honda CRV.
You don't even use it.
I use it. Right now I use it.
You don't have to use it.
I really don't. I used it the other day.
You're welcome to use a RAV6. Just, it costs so much in gas.
My brother-in-law is taking off Thursday, so it's fine. Or tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I offered it to him, but I don't know if he really needs it, because he doesn't need that much work done.
Yeah.
Well, just wait.
We'll,
yeah.
We'll figure that out. All right. And I think that's really it for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. And we'll catch you again next week with more exciting automotive news.